Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Empowered Hour with Empowered Living, Inc. How are you, Renata?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Just trying to get through this week already, but yeah. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. What was my week? So I got to spend some time with some people I don't always get to spend time with. And study. That was about it. What about you?
I got to, I hung out with my sister from others and my brothers from others, and we actually kind of sat and chilled for a little while. Happy to see, you know, my little surrogate brother is doing better. He's not 100%, but doing better. So actually got to lay eyes on him and tell him I love him and just try to speak some encouragement to him. So hopefully it's sticking with him. But for the most part, I just, you know, that was pretty much all I did all weekend, was just have some extended family time, which, you know, is needed. Definitely reminds me constantly of, you know, not all family isn't always blood, and definitely reiterates that to me, especially when I get to thinking negatively and things of that nature. So it's all good. So hopefully everybody out there is having a great day and enjoying themselves, and their Monday wasn't too stressful and it was actually enjoyable. Hopefully. I know Mondays are sometimes the blues day, so hopefully that was hopefully Monday was good for y'all. So today we are going to talk about, I guess, gracefully broken. I guess that's a good title for it, because I guess what prompted this was a post that I made a couple days ago. And it was actually a repost, but a lot of people who are my Facebook friends thought that it actually happened to me, which, you know, I'm not going to say that things in my life have not happened in that manner, where something that was minor to people around me didn't manifest into something major, or a life lesson, or some kind of a aha moment in my life. Just to give a little bit of the background of the post, basically the story is, this person was in Dollar Tree. They heard, you know, this child crying over the fact they couldn't have this particular toy. The toy was purchased. The child had this toy in their hand. The toy was purchased. The child was happy. Then the child instantly got mad again, because the big brother, or I think it was a boy, took the toy from them. And, you know, that child was real angry because the big brother took the toy from him. And the sibling basically tried to explain to that younger sibling that I had to take it from you to make it work. And so what it was a glow stick. And, you know, glow sticks, everybody know glow sticks don't work until you actually start to activate it or break it or make it have, you know, some sort of trauma in order to get it to show. And the person who was telling the story basically said, you know, that ministered to them, because the big brother was trying to educate the smaller brother that, you know, this doesn't work until it's broken. And a lot of times in our lives, we, you know, we will keep running from things. We want to run from pain. We want to run from when things get uncomfortable. And we want to basically take the cushy road. But a lot of times with life, taking the cushy road isn't as comfortable as we thought it would be, because a lot of times we'll have a part that will literally break us down and literally cause us to have to be broken to show the light of God shining through us. Now, I know a lot of people who listen to the show are not religious, and they're not inclined to believe in certain things, but even taking it as a general sense, if you think about all the things in your life, for instance, that have come that don't necessarily seem like they're favorable, doesn't seem like, you know, you have everything around you is hurting you. It seems like it's hurting you more and more and more. Your job is picking on you. Your spouse is nagging at you. Your children are getting disciplined at school, and it seems like the world, the walls, everything is crashing down. And then all of a sudden, you know, a silver lining comes. You know, you get the raise at work because you endured that trouble. Your spouse begins to love you more because, you know, they finally realize I need to appreciate what I have. The children snap out of their ways and actually start to begin to act right in school. You don't have to go to school as much, you know. So just thinking of it in the general sense, you know, we all have to go through something that causes us to be uncomfortable, to feel like we've been broken, to feel like, you know, we have been tested. And the post basically was saying, it's not everything that tests you, everything that's meant, or other people may say was meant to hurt you. It's not always meant to hurt you. It's actually meant to help you. And that's the gist of it. No, it's not verbatim correctly, but, I mean, it just gives you the gist of what it's saying without going too deep. I mean, we'll pick it apart, I'm sure, but Renata, I don't know. I mean, is there anything in your life that you could say that, I mean, that you feel like sharing, that you can look at now and be like, that was traumatic, that was hurtful, but I came out much better than I thought I would, and I came out able to let my light shine through this mess?
Which decade would you like?
You can go down in any of them that you feel comfortable sharing. I mean, because I know we've shared on the show before. We've shared on the show a few different times, different things that have happened to us that have felt like they were going to break us. But, you know, because you read the post. I mean, anything that you feel that would fit into that post directly that you feel like sharing? I guess you can start there.
So I will tell a story and then circle back around and answer the question. So last week I realized I was talking about being damaged goods with a couple of my clients, and just kind of talking about how, even though personally, in my opinion, I think all of us are damaged goods in some capacity. I think I don't feel like stores still do this, but I feel like back in the day, you know, if stores would have dents and all kind of stuff in it, and they would be like damaged goods, and you could purchase them at a discounted rate. And I think that all of us have that. Like I said, on some level, we have that. Something happened in our life that kind of bumped us around, maybe got a little dent here or there, and it impacted us moving forward. And so I guess, the biggest thing for me would have been my divorce. I mean, actually, I feel like my 30s, great, I'm not done with my 30s, but I feel like my 30s have just been probably the most challenging, and they've been a blessing and a challenge in the sense of I started out my 30s going through a divorce. Excuse me. And so I was extremely broken from that, very depressed, and just kind of went on autopilot during that process, because I didn't feel like I had the luxury of completely breaking down, because I had to take care of myself. So I had to make sure I still was able to go to work and things like that, and just kind of, you know, just do the minimum to get by. But I recognized that even though, excuse me, I went through that divorce and it was extremely painful, I wouldn't wish on anybody. I also recognize that it forced me to become a better version of myself. In the sense of, I recognize that I wasn't the Christian. It forced me to get more involved in church. threw myself in the church because I didn't want to throw myself into a man, just to be transparent. I remember clear as day sitting on the couch, and it's like, okay, Lord, I need to either go run to you or I'm going to run to a man. And I don't really want to run because I feel like that's not going to end well. You. So, church, it forced me to step out and try things that I probably wouldn't have tried. So, like, I went on a solo, my first solo trip. Was that my first solo trip? Yeah. That was my first, at least it was my longest, my first solo trip. Sorry, guys, I had a lot of, my allergies are kicking my butt, so I apologize for all the clearing in my throat. But, essentially, I went on a solo trip. A lot of stuff happened on the solo trip, but it was a good trip, but very much needed. So I would say, long story short, my divorce was a thing that was very breaking, but in the part that kind of helped me get back to where I needed to be, I'm glad that I went through it. So it was one of the most difficult things I went through, but one of the biggest blessings also. And, I mean, him and I are, we still get along. You know, we're still cordial to each other. I mean, we're not kicking it, but, like, we're still very cool. and what have you. So, I mean, what about you?
Well, I would probably say my entire life has just displayed to me about being gracefully broken. I didn't feel like a lot of things were positive at the time. And I think the older I've gotten, the more I realized that I had to go through certain things in order to get to something else or to get to something better. I mean, one of the biggest things, and the reason why I'll bring this part up is because this person messaged me over the weekend, and I'm not sure what kind of nostalgic feeling they were feeling, but they're clearly in a whole nother relationship. And basically, I guess they called themselves trying to check me. Now, this relationship that I was in with this person was the hardest relationship I've ever been in for a while. And I think I spoke about the relationship because I was with this person off and on for a better part of 8-9 years, I think it was. I don't even remember no more because I try to forget that. But, but like, the last thing that this person did to me, literally, I felt like broke me as a relationship person, because I'm not going to say I don't want a relationship, because I do. I don't want no listeners to think that I don't want relationships, but it made me think about all the things that I did wrong in that relationship. And then this person decided they wanted to basically, in a roundabout way, kind of tell me what I did wrong, but not necessarily look at what they did right or wrong in the relationship. And I was like, well, you know, and I had to remind this person that whatever happens to me from this point forward is no longer your business. You are about to get married too, like real soon. And why are you even messaging me about what was wrong with our relationship or what I should have done differently? I don't know if they feel in some kind of way, but I'm like, you need to focus, because clearly that's where your heart is. That's where your mind is, because you put a ring on her finger. So, and I don't want to go backwards. And that whole thing broke my relationship goal, if you will, or broke me to a point where I realize now that some things that I did in that relationship and even the relationships after that, that I led to quickly with my niceness. So I'm not going to say I'm going to be guarded, but it definitely helped me to protect my heart more, because even though I was with this person for 8 or 9 years, I found that I did not protect my heart. I got sucked in really immediately, and then I never found a boundary to step myself back. So, I mean, I've had a lot of lessons from people in general, even lessons that I caused myself and lessons that I should have learned before I entered into anything else. And I just thought it was strange that this person came out of nowhere, was trying to basically tell me about myself. And I'm like, but I'm not your concern anymore. I'm like, why is this any of your thought? And I had to literally say that. And then because I've become more, I'm trying to let my light shine a little bit more. I had to, like, check this person and be like, wait a minute. Like, you know, you and I have been done for a long time. I mean, if you want to give me insight to me, that's perfectly fine. You've done this for the last 5 years that we've been broke up. Now is not the time that you're trying to give me insight to me. I already know what's wrong with me. You need to deal with what's wrong with you. Clearly, the fact that you're texting me about something that's wrong with me and you about to get married, like, within the next few weeks, something's wrong with you. So, you know, but just in a long story short, that whole situation broke me down. I mean, me and this person are still cool, but, you know, not cool enough for him to be telling me about my flaws yet again, and you about to be married. Like, why is my flaws your business? So I had to figure out a skillful way to show this person, like, look, you broke me down, but I'm not broken. Still, you know, I'm not carrying old crap into a new relationship like they swear that I'm about to do, and, you know, other crap this person said. This really irked my whole spirit. I was like, why are you contacting me talking mess about what I do or don't do or what I need to do for the next one? That's clearly not your responsibility no more. But neither here nor there. So that's a lesson learned for me, that, you know, boundaries have to be set. And boundaries have to be set even for friends, you know, how much you let your friends, male or female, dictate what you do, because you only get one life, you know, you literally get one life, and life is so short. And, you know, I even made a post about that last week. In a matter of 24 hours, I heard of 5 people, various ages, who had passed away, and people who I'd actually been in contact with. Just looking on Facebook, you know, yesterday, last night, one of my buddies from high school, which I've met her father a few times in life, even parked at her father's house on for the state fair, he passed away. And that kind of, like, you know, was like, dang, everybody's just transitioning out of here. So, you know, I can't let another day go by without me living my best life, you know, even though I've been broken down, even though I've been taken through my own personal version of hell, I can't let that dictate what happens from this point forward. I have to keep pushing, you know, and I also have to shine my light through all this drama, because somebody's always watching. You know, you always hear somebody say that. Somebody's always watching to see how you act or see how you react to certain things. And unfortunately, we're always somebody's teacher. You know, just like in the post, the big brother was the little brother, their little sibling's teacher, you know, had to teach him real quick, like, this won't work until it goes through a breaking process. And a lot of times we as human beings don't work to our fullest potential until we go through some form of a breaking process. So, oh, shoot, we're getting our first cue for break. So when we come back, we'll continue this conversation for Gracefully Broken with the Empowered Hour with Empowered Living Inc. So we will be right back. Oh.
Break, tear down every lie, set the wrong thing right, 'cause when you have your way, something has to break, something has to break, right now in your name, something has to break.
Hey, it's your girl, Lady J, host of the I'm Possible radio show. That's right. I'm back, y'all. Tune in every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on JQLM Radio. Download the JQLM Radio app on your Android or Apple devices, or get JQLM Radio through the TuneIn Radio app or the Stream a Simple Radio app. You can also listen live from our website at www.egoentertainmentnet.com or straight from our Facebook page. Just click on the Use App button. If you miss a show, download or subscribe on any of the podcast platforms: Spreaker, iHeart, Spotify, Deezer, CastBox, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and more. I'm possible, you're possible, we're all possible. Love y'all. Deuces.
All right, so we're back with this deep topic of gracefully broken. So I feel like I've been talking too much, so Renata, I'll let you take over, because, you know, I feel like you have so much to offer because you're a therapist. Therapalize us, no kidding.
So I guess, well, I had a question for you. But
you got a
question? You don't want to talk.
I can talk, too.
Oh, that's
right. You can ask me.
So I guess my question would be, what is your definition of failure? Let me ask that.
I don't know, because I keep recreating it every other day. Because, like, you know, I think failure is not trying. Or giving up easily, in my and this is just totally my opinion, not the opinion of Empower Living Inc. or any of its affiliates. But I think not trying is the biggest sign of failure, because you have to try in order to fail, and if you don't fail, that means you haven't tried. So, which reminds me of somebody else's post I was looking at, like. It's actually another ex of mine, sister-in-law. She posted this really long post, and I tried to read all of it, but it was like 4 or 5 paragraphs. It was really long. But the it basically said that she, 5 years ago, was a business owner. It was in a relationship, long-term relationship, and, you know, basically quit her corporate job, things like that nature, to do this business venture. And she talked about how that business venture literally started to fail. She had to sell it for less than it was worth, less than what she owed on it. She had to get rid of the property, taking an L on that. Basically, the grand scheme of things, losing, I would say, probably over $100,000+. Being in debt, credit score was 600. On the dot, or maybe below 600, literally lost the relationship. The relationship with the guy or whoever she was in a relationship with had sued her for like $50,000. I mean, like, when I say she had went through a lot, she went through a lot. She went through uncertain living quarters, the whole nine. Fast forward to 5 years later, she's now a multiple business owner. I think she owns about 3 businesses. She has a new relationship, she's married now, and she's making 6 figures now, and this is gross 6 figures. Her credit score is 800. She was saying that, I guess, not necessarily to brag, but to say that, you know, when you feel like you're at your lowest, when you feel like you're broken, that, you know, things will look up. You know, you just have to stay the course. So, and I took that as to say, you know, if she hadn't failed in her eyes, and maybe she doesn't feel like she failed, but I'm getting from the story, like, she had failed at a few things, and it felt like, you know, it was meant to be, and that business was meant to be, that relationship was meant to be. Everything at that time felt like it was meant to be, because she at one point was at the top of it, and then maybe so many years later, ended up being not so much as a blessing, but it became almost ultimately like a failed attempt at something. So if she hadn't tried back then and quote-unquote failed, she wouldn't be where she is now with more than what she thought she would have and more than she had before. So for me, I feel like failure is when you just stop trying. And, you know, as many business things of classes and courses that we've been in, that's something that always sticks out to me. People always say something similar to that. If you don't fail, that doesn't, you know, failure is not a bad thing all the time. Sometimes you may need to go back to the drawing board and tweak your idea or revamp your idea or come back with something more exclusive. Or, you know, you may just need to make a little bit of change. But failing doesn't mean you stop. Failing just means you have to redo something. Something, you have to fix what's broken in order to not fail. So long story short, that's how I feel failure is, you know, literally when you stop trying. And that's just, you know, my opinion.
I asked your definition of it, so that's fine.
Okay. What about you?
What about me?
Yeah.
I think, when I think of failure, I think of missing the mark, I guess. I have a goal that I have something I was trying to accomplish, and I did not accomplish it the way that I thought I would have accomplished it. Yeah. That would be my definition of failure.
Okay.
Do you feel like failure is always negative?
No, I don't feel like it is. I used to feel like it was. I used to feel like failing was a bad thing, and it was definitely something I didn't want to get used to doing. Because in my own way, I'm competitive with certain things. Even when I was doing marching band and running track and being a cheerleader, failing was something I didn't like to do, even though I did fail at it a lot. And I think it drove me to do better because, like, for instance, when I was in high school on cheerleading squad, I was, and I'm sure some cheerleaders who are with me will agree or disagree, but I was one of the better cheerleaders on the squad. But because of my size, because of, I think, people have their favorites, I was never given the opportunity to be any more than the JV captain. And it kind of irked me for a long time. And then when I finally got the opportunity to go out for varsity, I did a mean girl move, and they love me. Oh, my gosh, why have you not been on varsity this whole time? Blah, 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 blah. And at that point is when I decided, once they offered it to me, I said, oh, well, now that I know I can get this, I was the mean girl, and I was like, you know what, I don't want it. And I walked away from cheerleading at that point because I was like, I've been on this cheerleading squad for a long time. Nothing has changed since the day I was here. I'm still the same thick girl. I'm still the same loud mouth that I've always been. I always had the same cheer spirit, but it was because I don't know who, but someone did not want me to elevate. And, you know, I probably didn't handle it the best way, but I did my cheer, I did my thing, and after that, they was like, oh, they posted, you know, oh, you can be on the varsity squad, and da-da-da. I was like, nope, I'm going to go focus on band. I did that, and I walked off. I did my mic drop before mic drops were even popular, so I don't think failure was definitely always bad, because sometimes it motivates you to do more. Just like the young lady who I was telling a story about with the businesses. If she had took her failure as a failure and stopped, she wouldn't be six, seven figures higher than she was and have multiple streams of income like she does if she would have taken that failure as a loss or, you know, as a negative thing.
Okay. Sorry, I was over here sneezing, coughing.
I'm glad we're still social distancing because, boy, all that sneezing and stuff you're doing, I don't want no parts of it.
Well, this is what happens when you try to be grown and hang out outside and go to bonfires and stuff. And you eat a lot of dairy. Your allergies is like, oh, okay. You thought you was grown? I got you.
I did the same thing, but I don't have as bad allergies as you, I don't think. I don't know. But I think I stayed enough away from my fires that I didn't get inhale all the smoke. So yeah, I mean, what about you, Renata? Do you feel like failure is always a negative or bad thing?
No, I don't. I think that I would say I'm more comfortable with it than I ever have been. But I recognize that just because you fail at something, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. And sometimes failing is the blessing that you needed to get you where you needed to be. So with one of my clients, I kind of shared the story of how I ended up being a therapist versus my original career choice. And I recognize most people go to college and they don't end up with what they start out. But I'll give you the short version of the story. So since I was second or third grader, I've always wanted to be a doctor. So I got exposed to psychology like my junior year of high school, sophomore, junior year, and kind of fell in love with it. And so decided that I was going to be a pre-med and psychology major. I don't know how I was going to do both, but in my mind, I was going to be a doctor and a therapist. So got to school and recognized that, let's just say I was one point away from academic probation. So I got my act together because I wasn't studying. That's just really what it was. I wasn't studying. I've been blessed that I haven't had to study, and I had to study in college. And the thing is, me studying, it wasn't even like, it would have just been, if I would have read the book at least once, I would have remembered it. So just really slacking off. At the school that I was at, though, you had to be you had to join the pre-med club in order to for that major. And so I went to the meeting and was kind of venting to them about this particular professor that I had. I do pretty good in science in general. It's a subject that I was very interested in, especially biology. I would say biology and chemistry I just did really well in. And I was doing horrible in this biology class, along with majority of the class. And so just kind of venting to them about how, you know, I'm just not really picking it up. He goes way too fast. I don't feel like I'm understanding the concepts, this, and this. And so, and it's so funny because even to this day, I don't remember a lot of my professor's names. I do remember that professor's name. I'm not going to say it, but I do remember that professor's name. So told them, and their response to me was, well, we get that complaint a lot. My response was, okay, so what other classes does this professor teach? Because in my mind, maybe I could just thug it out, get past this class. If I got to take it over, I'd take it over. But, you know, it might just be this one class and you just figure it out. And they were like, oh, no, they also teach microbiology. My response was, why do they still have jobs? If you're telling me that this professor continuously gets this complaint, their response was, well, they're brilliant. My response was, so they're brilliant, but they're not a good professor, and that's okay? Like, that's not connecting at all for me. So I left the orientation for the pre-med club, and I remember walking home from my dorm and was talking to God, and it was a nice little walk because of where I was, and this was my sophomore year. And I remember saying, okay, God, I don't think I'm getting into anybody's medical school with this GPA that I got, and I really don't think, this is the right thing for me. And I had the most peace about dropping this major. Like, I was really content with it. Now, it was really hard to tell my family I wasn't going to be a doctor because I've been talking about being a doctor since I was a third grader, second, third grader. And it kind of bothered me because, like, for whatever reason, like, I was taking a lot of credit hours, and so I had to drop down to, I normally would take a minimum of 15, maximum of 18, and I had to drop down to, like, I think, like, 10 or 12, 13. Which is really not that big of a deal, but for me, it felt like it was a big deal. So I just felt like that semester I wasn't thriving as much as I could have. Now, to give you context, that's the only semester that I stayed on the dean's list. That's the only year that I stayed on the dean's list, but I didn't feel like I was being successful. I felt like that was a failure because it was like, man, you're not going to live up to the thing that you've been consistently saying you wanted to do. But had I not had that experience, I might not have became a therapist. I might have just tried to suck it up and get into medical school. So, I mean, in a roundabout way, that needed to happen to get me focused where I need to be. And because of that, I recognized, okay, you know you want to be a therapist. You know you want to get into graduate school. So that means you need to be as well-rounded as humanly possible. It forced me to get to become more active in school, which connected me with my mentor. Through a series of events, I ended up at the graduate school that I needed to and all those things. So, like, everything fell into place because of that quote-unquote failure. So I know that was a long story, but, yeah, so that's kind of – that's why I feel like failure is not always a negative thing.
Yeah, it was not a long story. I mean, it's definitely relevant. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, even just to get back into schools, you would have certain things ingrained into your head. I don't know. I remember when I was younger, people would say, failure is not an option, you know, or, you know, if you fail, you know, you should do this, this, and that, or basically, like, a lot of times when people talk about failure, when back in the 80s and 90s, it was like almost had a negative connotation to it. Like it was just like if you fail, you know, be upset about it and let it consume you. It almost kind of like, even though that may not have been what they were saying, but, you know, by saying failure is not an option, why isn't failure an option? Why isn't that taught to children? To that you will fail, because a lot of children, unfortunately, even back when we were younger, would do things that would harm themselves. Some of them would actually take themselves out of the world by holding that in, by holding that failure and holding it as a standard when failure isn't meant to be held like that. And I think nowadays, I've talked to a couple of my little nieces about things that they learn at school, and I think they've changed that, that whole failure's not an option mantra, because if you think about it, people who fail at things often become the greatest at what their craft is, whatever that craft is. I'll tell this quick little story before we have to go to break. Or actually, we do have to go to break, so I think, yeah. So since we have to go to break, I guess I'll tell the story when we come back. But we'll be right back with the Empowered Hour with Empowered Living Inc. Continuing on this this talk about failing and breaking and being broken. So we'll be right back.
This is a Missy Elliott exclusive.
Missy in this doing. You ain't never seen Missy in this doing. I'm finna win, finna go on, finna go in. Me and my friends, yeah, we on 10, and the song never ends, or the song never ends. Body shaped like a fisheye lens. I make it drop, yeah, I make it bend. Cool off till I feel the wind. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Way too high to get over me. Way too low to get under my skin. All the DJs gon' hit that spin. I'ma play this again and again and again. Cool up. Cool up. Cool up. Cool up, cool up. Cool up. Cool up, cool up. Cool up. Cool up, cool up. Cool up.
Are there areas in your life that need healing? Consider Empower Living, Inc. We are a therapeutic practice that meets the clients where they are. Call us at 317-969-5694 or visit us at www.empoweredlivinginc.net to see a list of the services we offer.
Empowered Living, Inc., a holistic approach to a better you.
Okay, so we are back with the last segment of the show. The show always goes so fast, but, you know, we got about 15 minutes left anyway, but, or about 10 minutes left. But anyway, so the story I was going to tell, I was watching a documentary that I had recorded a long time ago, and I hadn't forgotten about it. I was going through my DVR, going and getting some stuff out, and it was about Stephen King, about the master of horror, because, you know, it is, you know, Halloween time is always, you think about, whenever you think about Halloween, you always think about Stephen King. This particular story, I don't think I ever realized Stephen King's story as much as when I watched the documentary. So if anybody's not familiar with Stephen King, you've probably seen 90% of his movies or read some adaptation of his books, but check him out. He's pretty creepy, but if you don't like horror films, his story is really unique. But he started off as being a English major. He went to college. He got his degree. He became a professor. All this time, he's been writing. Been writing, been writing, been writing. Writing movies. He married his college sweetheart. Writing this whole time. He's wrote probably, I don't know, 7 books by this point. Nobody wanted to give him a time of day. They literally told him, your writing sucks. We don't want nothing to do with you. You don't know what you're doing. And so one particular day, he was writing this story, and he got 3 pages in, you know, and he talked, the documentary talked about how he walked through the cemeteries to clear his mind. And this particular day, he walked past a cemetery. He had passed his tombstone that said Carrie on it. Went home, started writing about Carrie, and I could be, you know, a little iffy with my timeline, but the story still goes right. So he started writing Carrie. He got 3 pages in. He threw it away. He's like, oh, my gosh, this is horrible, blah, blah, blah. He still wanted to start from scratch. He just threw it out. His wife came by, pulled out a trash can, and was like, no, you got something here. Keep writing. So his wife encouraged him to keep writing. He kept writing, kept writing. He shopped this book around, just like, for giggles, we'll say 3 to 5 publishing companies. Most of them were like, no, you don't want nothing to do with it. Don't want to do it. Don't want to do it. Finally, he got to the point where he, finally, somebody paid him attention. And everybody who knows anything about scary movies, even from the 70s, knows about the movie Carrie. And this went on a few times in his life. He got rejected. And then he started, once they started to recognize, oh, he's pretty good, his name got him on the best-selling list just because of his name. Didn't matter what the book was about. It was just, oh, you hear Stephen King? They was like, oh, you got a Stephen King book? Grab it. But he was battling with his own insecurities and failures, feeling like failures and things like that, so he turned to drugs. He said he did every drug that was an upper that kind of helped him write, but then also helped him stay awake because he would write for hours and hours. He would teach in the day, write for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, before this, he had hit rock bottom to the point where when he threw that Carrie story away, he was down to, I think they said they were down to their last $20. He had 2 to 3 children, his wife, they lived in his trailer. They literally had nothing. And finally, when he got his break, he got a check on his door for, I think, $25,000. And, you know, it changed his life. And because he failed so many times, and he said he took a nail and put every rejection letter, every time he got a rejection letter, he kept putting these letters on his nail to the point where the nail got so heavy from all the rejections that he got, the nail fell off the wall because he had had so many rejection letters at one point. And he talked about how he kind of looked at his failures and he kept going, kept writing. Not to say he didn't have any failures in there, because there was a book called Rage that he pulled off the shelf because he talked about school shootings before school shootings were popular, in quotation mark, because if one child decided to take his book, read it, put it in his locker, and he decided to kill his classmates, pretty much the same way. And he said that was his inspiration for doing this. So he pulled that book off the shelf. So that book, if it ever is in circulation, it's probably because somebody had it from years ago, but nobody's probably going to ever sell that because it's probably worth a lot of money because it was only printed for so long and then they snatched it off the shelves because they said it was inciting, you know, the negative thing. So, but that story right there kind of, you know, solidified to me, like, man, Stephen King is one of the most known literary people, good or bad, for his works. I mean, his works have been made into movies like The Shining and It and, you know, Carrie, and all these movies have been remade several times. There's so many of his movies. One movie I didn't even realize was his, but, you know, so many things have come just from him not giving up and him posting those failures in his face and making him work harder to make sure he didn't get any more rejection letters. Like, could you imagine how that nail had to be stuck in there and he kept sticking pieces of paper? How heavy that thing, all those papers had to be, how many papers had to be on there in order for it to fall out the wall? And he did let it break him at one point because he turned to drugs, and he said he did every drug. He drank mouthwash and cough syrup, you name it. If he thought it could give him some sort of exhilarating high, he drank it, he smoked it, he snorted it, he did whatever he did. And I think what snapped him out of that was his wife told him, look, I'm about to leave if you don't get yourself together. So he kicked the habit. He's been clean, supposedly, all the way until, you know. But, yeah, I mean, failure to me is not a bad thing. And it's definitely something that I'm glad that more people are embracing, because I think a lot of times when people get to that point where they don't realize failures are necessary, they often try to cause a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Because all these stories, even the stories we've shared, have all been temporary. They've all been things that hurt for a little while. And they, I'm not going to say they don't hurt. They hurt like hell, you know. And they will probably continue to hurt, but that hurt should not break us. That hurt should drive us to be better for the next thing, whatever that next thing is, whether it's the next relationship, whether it's the next book, whether it's the next business, whether it's the next degree, whatever it is, it should drive us to be the best version of ourselves, because life is super short. And, you know, no matter if you live 90 plus years or you live days, life is short. And the moments that you have to cherish them. You literally have to cherish them.
And you will be so right. So right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make you speechless, but.
Well, I know we also need to be wrapping up. So, I mean, I think that's a good note, a good way to end it.
Yeah.
Failure isn't always a bad thing. Being damaged is not always a bad thing. You know, a lot of, like we said, a lot of times those broken pieces sometimes give us more clarity than being whole. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm getting my lesson. 2020 has definitely showed me my lessons in failure, so.
Well, 2020 is vision.
Yeah, I used to have 2020 vision until 2020. No, I think I'm back to 2020 now because my vision went down a little bit a couple years ago, I guess, because I got older. But now it's whew, Chad, that clarity, whew. I tell you, I mean, we can definitely end on that note. I mean, Empowered Living is definitely here to help serve as a reminder of you know, failing and getting back up, because our business has definitely failed and we've revamped and revived, still mm-hmm. reviving, still trying to get back into some sort of normalcy, and just trying to go, you know, and we have so many things that we want to do, and we need everybody else to accept our flaws and also trust us when we fail, that, you know, to get back in there, because, you know, boy, I just, you know, this is one of them subjects that could keep going for hours and hours, but I tell you, it's just, it's definitely near and dear to me, because the more I think about how much I failed at certain things and how much I've not done certain things right, it's always a good reminder that you still have breath, you can still make some kind of change, you can still grow, you can still prosper. You will still fail until the day you leave this earth. You're probably going to fail 15 more thousand times, but it's, you know, how you revamp, how you come up from it. Are you going to be that phoenix that rises from the ashes? Are you going to cover yourself up with them ashes and say, I'm just going to stay there? So definitely want to encourage everybody to be a phoenix and rise and be that beacon of light, you know, just because you never know, like I said before, who's watching you. And just because you fail.